The lecture goes well.
Thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and coordinator and host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors. Everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, and now even after we're all out, Spirit continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is so important to all of us. I cannot tell you how many emails I got saying, oh my goodness, I need to hear this program. We will be hearing today on fall prevention, not the autumn season, but exactly how to prevent falling. I know that I definitely need to hear this. And so many of the people that I know about, all of us seem to be tripping over our feet wherever we go. So we thank so much New York Presbyterian Hospital of Queens for coordinating this program and for all of the wonderful, wonderful medical programs they have given us since the beginning of the pandemic. We will be hearing today from Dr. Irina Lozanskaya and Dr. Stephanie Nan, who are senior physical therapists at the hospital. And it is my pleasure and my honor to turn the Spirit Forum over to them. Thank you everyone for joining us.
So good morning, everybody. We're very, very excited to do this talk today. And besides fall prevention, we're gonna touch base a little bit with you about importance of exercises in your life. So let me share my screen. We're gonna start with this presentation. Just give us one moment. Yeah. All right, so we're gonna start with debunking some myth of aging.
We haven't seen the shared screen yet.
All right.
Okay, now we have it. But we still see the sidebar.
Yeah. We're apologizing. How did we do it? We'll get to Laura here.
Give us one moment. Technical difficulties. Yeah. We troubleshooted it earlier. Are you able to see everything now or still just
the sidebar? We still see the sidebar.
How okay. How did we do it before?
I mean, we can have the sidebar. It's not terrible. No, now we're seeing it smaller.
Should we shrink the sidebar? Is that better? At least you can see the whole slide. This is okay.
Let's play. Okay, so we're apologizing for this little delay. So I'd like to start our discussion with introducing you to a very influential individual. So on the left side, you see Miss Eva Barr. She's 87 years of age, and she completed London Marathon in 2015 with a beautiful timing on seven
hours. We're only seeing the first slide.
Okay, let's see.
Okay.
I think we just have to do it this way. I don't know how we could try. Yeah.
Can you get Laura?
Sure. Okay, and then I'll.
So I'm gonna start discussion. Do you see those two beautiful ladies?
Yes, yes, we do.
Yeah, so on the left hand side, 87-year-old Eva Barr, who completed London Marathon in 2015. And on the right hand side, you see beautiful Canadian Miss Betty Jean McHugh, who was 88 years of age, and she ran marathon in 6 hours and 31 minutes. So she earned herself this beautiful title of Flying Granny. And what's interesting, just a day before the event, she fell. She fell, she got hurt, but she decided to participate anyway. So that's a spirit. Now, over... Okay, on the second slide, you see on the left-hand side, 9-year-old Janie Wood Allen that ran marathon in London in 2002. And she was very, very disappointed with her timing, 11 hours and 34 seconds. Why she was disappointed? Just 2 weeks prior to the event, she fell and she hurt her head. And she really, really wanted to participate. And again, she did it. She did it with the flying colors. On the right-hand side, you see Gladys Burrell. She is our fellow American. She ran marathon at age of 92. She was always a very, very active person, but she started running when she was 87 years of age. You heard me right, 87. Now let's look at those fine gentlemen. On the left-hand side, you see Mr. Paul Freeman. So he started practicing training for running when he was 69 years of age. And when he was 79, he had a massive heart attack. Nobody could believe that he would be able to restore his ability fully to the point when he is actually turned 90, he was able to complete London Marathon. Now, on the right-hand side, you see our New Yorker, a 96-year-old Jonathan Mendes. He is World War II veteran. He was former Marine, very goal-oriented individual. And when he was completing his run, he actually had two aides walking next to him. And after he crossed finishing line, he got himself down to the ground and he asked for a scotch. Now, my favorite two people, they probably the most senior participants when it comes to running. On the left-hand side, American Harriet Thompson. She was 94 years old when she ran marathon in 2017. But prior to become a runner, she was a piano concert player. She has nothing to do with sports or activity until she turned 76. Another amazing fact about this lady, she is a cancer survivor. She beat cancer not once, but twice. Now on the left-hand side, you see Mr. Faruja Singh. He is 102 years of age. You heard me right, 102 years of age when he participated in Hong Kong Marathon in 2013. And he also started running when he was in his late 80s. And his reason was to overcome depression because he lost his beloved wife and his son. So why do we have to exercise? One more time, physical activity can reduce anxiety, depression, cognitive impairments, and save us from dementia. Exercises and physical activity help to improve overall psychological well-being and self-esteem, reduces the risk of developing chronic conditions and diseases, including heart attack, stroke, hypertension, diabetes, osteoporosis, obesity, some forms of cancers, And even though physical activity cannot stop the biological aging process, there is evidence that regular exercise can improve health and life expectancy. So let's look closer a little bit more into those factors that we correlate with aging. What happened to us when we age? I don't like this slide, so we're going to go very quick about those negative things that happen to people, but they all preventable. I have to tell right away. So number one is decline in muscle function, flexibility, strength, decline in cardiovascular function, decline in pulmonary function, only if we're not going to do anything about it. Reduction of metabolism, increased weight and accumulation of body fat, increase of chronic disease risks, such as hypertension, diabetes, obesity, certain cancers. Also, degenerative muscular skeletal conditions, such as osteoporosis, arthritis, and sarcopenia. So what is sarcopenia? Sarcopenia is depleting of the muscle mass. So if osteoporosis is known as depleting of bony mass, sarcopenia is a condition when we start losing our muscle mass. And here I wanna show you this beautiful 100-year-old Edith Murrell Triana from Florida. So she started lifting weight when she was 91 years of age. So if everything is right about my previous slide, when I said people depleting their muscle mass and people depleting their bone, probably at the age of 91, she also suffers some loss of bony mass and muscle mass, but she started training. And when she turned 100, 9 years after, she was able to deadlift 165 pounds and bench press 65 pounds. So she is Guinness World Record holder for oldest weightlifting lifter. Now, let's say you get inspired and you want to start, but you don't know from where to start. So our guidelines would be you have to start low and go slow. Older adults should match the level of physical activity to their level of fitness. And definitely you have to consult with your doctor if you have some conditions, and you can discuss level of your activity with your medical healthcare providers. You have to protect yourself by using appropriate sport equipment. Many times people approaching me and saying, oh, I saw this device online and I purchased it. Is it okay for me? Is it safe for me? So safety comes first. Look for safe environments when you're exercising. When people come to me and say, oh, should I ride my bicycle? I have a bicycle. My question would be, okay, when was the last time you were running on your bicycle in the street? Well, maybe 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago. So my answer would be safety comes first, and maybe we should start you on a stationary bicycle before we go on the street. So follow instructions and recommendation and make safe choices on when, where, and how to be active. And be under care, if you're under care of healthcare provider, definitely discuss it with your care healthcare provider. You can go to any community, local community physical therapist, and tell him that you have a goal to become active and you want to know from where to start. So we would be very happy to help you out. And I'm sure my fellow colleagues also would be able to help you in this quest. Okay, Center for Disease Control and Prevention in 2022 suggested that physical activities that requires moderate effort is safe for most people. But again, if you have a chronic health condition, please consult your doctor. What type of exercise program you can get involved? Number one, it's aerobic exercises. Aerobic exercise training involves walking, biking, running, swimming, dancing. There is another program that we call resistance exercise training, and that involves work against applied force or weight. It could be your own body weight, or it could be barbells or resistance bands. A flexibility exercise program, the best example would be yoga. So those activities help you to increase your mobility and range of motion. And balance training. Why balance training important? Because it helps us to be steady on our feet and reduce incidence of falling. Now, we're gonna talk about fall prevention a little bit more in details. Why is fall prevention so important? Well, let me show you this statistic. One out of four adults, 65 years and older, fall each year. One out of five falls causes serious injuries such as broken bones and head injury. In New York City, falls are leading cause of injury-related death and hospitalization for older adults. And women are more prone to falling than men. And most common serious fall injuries from a fall is a broken hip. Every year, 300,000 older adults, those 65 and older, are hospitalized for hip fractures. What other risk factors are we considering when we're talking about high risk of falling? Number one is a previous fall. So if we know there is individuals that fell twice or three times, we understand that third fall also can happen. Gait and balance difficulty. When we see somebody who's very unsteady on their feet, walks very, very slowly, and has trouble with balance, yes, we consider this person high risk of fall individual. People who have muscle weakness, people who simply don't follow safety rules. So your home could be a hazard. And a little bit later, we're gonna talk a lot how to safety proof your houses to reduce possibility of falling. Now, medical risk factors. People who have vision problems and hearing loss. People who have vestibular and balance disorders. Cardiac conditions such as arrhythmias and blood pressure fluctuations. Sometimes people simply blacking out, and the next thing that they see, they found themselves on the floor. It happens quite often. We call it syncope. Arthritis, osteoporosis, neurological conditions such as stroke, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis. Those people are high risk of fall individuals, and some cancers, which also can affect the bone. Sometimes bone breaks and then person falls. And we're talking only about those pathological fractures. Other risk factors for falling, it's actually medication. Many times side effects of medications that we have to take are causing fatigue, dizziness and drowsiness. And combination of medication, more than four medication that a person takes can create those side effects of dizziness, fatigue, and drowsiness. So you should always take your medication, but review medication side effects with your physician. Now, there are some personal risk factors for falling. So number one is inactivity. When people inactive, they start become weaker, and that makes them more prone to falling. Age, but age is also very, very highly correlated with inactivity. So of course we cannot do anything about aging, but we can do a lot about becoming more active and getting stronger. Bad habits. So people who smoke, people who drink, definitely put themselves in more danger of falling. And diet, poor diet, let's say such simple thing, I'm not drinking enough water, dehydration can make you feel more tired, more exhausted, and more prone to falling. Now, we're gonna talk about real strategies. What can we do to reduce risk of falling? And my fellow colleague, Stephanie, she's gonna take over.
Okay. So Irina talked about all the fun stuff, you know, things that we can't necessarily control, but we could seek out to our medical provider to guide us with. Now we're gonna go into things that you can do personally in your house to reduce your risk of falls. Of course, caring for your feet, what does that mean? You know, get pedicures? No. As, you know, time changes, you know, our feet get weaker, you know, they might change shape, we might lose some sensation in our feet. We always want to make sure we're protecting our feet because that's our direct contact with the floor. If you're not able to balance properly, it's likely something in your foot. So you might need to get orthotics for your shoes, maybe seek out a podiatrist, if just to kind of see if they have any advice for you. Of course, Irina had mentioned earlier, focusing on medicine safety, making sure the medications that you're taking doesn't cause the drowsiness, the dizziness, the loss of balance. If those things do happen, you know, being aware of when you're taking the medications, maybe it's those are certain times in the day when you should take it easy, sit for a little longer, give your body time to adjust what it's going through. And then of course, our favorite is being active. The way you mitigate these risks are staying active, really continuing to improve your strength, your balance, and your body's ability to function. So the things that you can do more on your end are making your home safer. Falls at home. Most fractures are the result of a fall at home. They're usually related to an everyday activity such as walking, up and down the stairs, going to the bathroom, carrying groceries. Many falls are the result of hazards like slippery or wet surfaces, insufficient lighting, poor footwear, and cluttered pathways in your homes. And we can look at this photo on the left. I think we can all agree that that's probably the least decluttered house that there is. There's things scattered all over the floor. You know, humans, we're very busy people, and we have a tendency of putting things off, and then eventually the box of the packages that you received in the mail, they pile up in the corner and then they create a mess. The mail that we get in, we slip them in the stairwells, we put them somewhere, and then they end up on the floor, and those increase your risk of slipping. So if you're not sure how to declutter your home, you know, seek out a family member, a friend, maybe take a picture, show it to your healthcare provider, show it to your physical therapist, and ask them for suggestions on how to declutter your home to make it safer for you. So step one, look at the floor. Check every floor in your house. Like I mentioned, remove clutter. You know, make sure there's always a clear path that allows you to go through the room directly and then paths to your bathroom, kitchen, living room. Make sure that the floorboards are even, you know, just like the body changes with time, your house changes with time. So you always want to make sure floors are nice and even, you know, the threshold from where you enter different rooms, that's nice and flat or secure to the floor. You want to check for phone cords, electrical cords, make sure ledges are nice and low so you don't have to step over something too high to enter a different room. And of course, remove scatter rugs, secure loose rugs with double face tape, tacks, or slip resisting backing. And that's what we have in the picture on the bottom. You know, sometimes securing the carpet to the floor, if you're really attached to the carpet, reduces the risk of you tripping or slipping on a corner that's folded up. In your bedroom, place a lamp, telephone, or flashlight near your bed. The nightstand is a perfect place for this. Sleep on a bed that's easy to get in and out of, so you're reducing your risk of falling. Let's say you need to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Arrange your clothes in the closet so they're easy to reach. The everyday items, put them somewhere you don't have to reach up too far or bend down too low to get. Install night lights in the routes between your bedroom and the bathroom, and all the time getting in and out of bed. A lot of times, you know, when you get out of bed too quickly, you kind of get a little lightheaded, a little dizzy, a little disoriented. Always take time in between transitions. Something great that we included in a photo over here is that little bed rail. It helps you get out of bed a little safer. And then if you're feeling a little unsteady when you're sitting, you have something to hold on to give yourself a chance to kind of get your bearings in before you stand up and continue with your day. In your living room, it's very, very important to keep all rooms well lit. Mood lighting isn't necessarily the safest thing, you know, nice lighting so you can see everything in your path. Install easy access light switches at all the room entrances. So once you enter a room, you can turn the light on right away. Glow in the dark switches are helpful so you can see that in the dark when you need to reach the light switch. Don't sit on a chair or sofa that's too low or difficult to stand from. I'm sure we all know the higher the surface is, the easier it is for your body to sit and stand. And of course, watch out for your pet and its toys. We love our dogs, our cats, all our little friends, but you know, when they're always kind of standing by your feet, you can turn, they can throw your balance off. So just make sure before you make any drastic movements when you're upright that you're looking for your pet. In your kitchen, when you're cooking, if you ever spill anything, immediately wipe it up. Even if it's on the countertop, you don't want the chance of the spilled sauce dripping onto the floor and having you slip on it. You know, store food, dishes, and cooking equipment easy within reach. Store commonly used items in easily accessible cabinets. Move closest items to the front so that it's easier for you to reach. And do not stand on chairs or boxes to reach upper cabinets. They make great step stools these days with handles for you to hold on to. So if you need to reach something on the top shelf, it's a little more secure. Stairs and steps. So we mentioned lighting many, many times. Light switches should be at the bottom and the top of the stairs. You do not want to ever go up or down the stairs with the lights off. There should be enough light to see each step clearly. And keep flashlights near these areas just so that in the event you can't turn on the light, whether there's a power outage or the light bulb is out, you have access to light to increase your safety. Remove any loose rugs from the bottom of top or stairs. Use solid colors on stairs to show the edges so you know when you're arriving at the next step. Right here, we have yellow strips that are kind of showing you the edge of each step. And install handrails on both sides. You know, something to hold on to is always very, very important, and extend the full length of the stairs. In the bathroom, use non-slip mats on showers and bathroom floors to reduce your risk of slipping or tripping. Adaptive equipment, use grab bars, raised toilet seats, or shower chairs. We're going to show you some pictures of specifically what these items are. And of course, a nightlight in the bathroom is always great. So what we mentioned earlier about a non-slip mat in the bathtub in this photo on the top left, that's going to make sure you're not slipping on the surface of your bathtub. On the top right, that's a raised toilet seat. Similar to sofas and chairs being at an appropriate height, raising the toilet seat will make it easier for you to sit and stand from. On the bottom left, there's a bed, there's a rail installed into your tub for you to get in and out of your bathtub easily, something for you to hold on to. We know that the bathroom can become a very, very slippery place. In the bottom center, that's a shower chair. Shower chairs come in different sizes. Bathrooms come in different sizes, so you always want to make sure you have the appropriate chair that fits safely. And then on the bottom right, you have grab bars to install into the bathroom for other things you to hold on to while you're entering and exiting the bathtub or shower. So this is another picture showing you different options to set things up. The commode or raised toilet seat over the toilet, that's another way to raise the height of your toilet. That's the shower chair I mentioned earlier. And then of course, another great tool is a handheld shower. If you're sitting on the shower chair, the handheld shower is a great way to help you bathe yourself without having to stand and maneuver around a slippery bathtub. Other ways to reduce falls. Light and moderate exercise can improve overall strength and mobility and decrease fall risk. And of course, it's always very important to speak to your doctor before you start any type of program. Have your vision checked at least once a year by an eye doctor. Poor vision can increase your risk of falling. Get up slowly after you sit or lie down. That's what I mentioned earlier. Give yourself time in between transitions. So if you're feeling dizzy or lightheaded, you get a moment to get your bearings in before you continue on. And very, very importantly, do not rush. Take your time. If you're running for the bus, there's no need because another bus will come. If you know that you need extra time to get somewhere, plan accordingly just so you don't have to run the risk of having to rush to get somewhere. And wear properly fitted non-skid shoes inside and outside of the house. Avoid going barefoot or wearing slippers or high heels. So what is the role of physical therapy? You know, we work with the doctors. So the doctors will give us a prescription to tell us what you need. You know, it's always important to seek out your healthcare provider before starting physical therapy. A physical therapist will do an assessment. We ask you a bunch of questions to ask what you think you're limiting in. And through that, we create an individualized plan to help you out. We prescribe appropriate strength and balance exercises. We work with other healthcare providers in addressing underlying causes. Medical conditions can increase your risk of falling. So it's good to seek out a physical therapist because we have a general understanding of different medical conditions and how they can affect your balance, and providing recommendations on appropriate community programs. So over here, we have listed the activity-specific balance confidence scale. In physical therapy, we like a lot of self-assessments. We like to give patients outcome measures that you assess yourself on. And this ABC scale has you basically answer a list of questions and you grade from 0 to 100% how difficult or how confident you feel doing these different things. And we like to do those at different points of the physical therapy treatment scale to see how you feel you're improving and how you feel your balance is changing with the different types of things we're having you do. So this is just the bigger, this is the actual ABC scale. So you can see there's 16 questions. And as the questions progress, they get a little, the tasks they're asking you to kind of think about, they get more challenging with time. And, you know, we grade your confidence based on that. Then we have other outcome measures that we would do in the physical therapy clinic. These are also things that you can do yourself, but we want to urge and make sure you understand the safety of these things. You know, if you're not sure if you can do these on your own, have someone keep you company while you're setting it up. So the first thing is the timed up and go. It's the tug. So it lets us set a distance of 10 meters. We have the person stand up from the chair, walk as fast as they can to the 10 meter point, turn around and sit down. And we time this. And this is a good assessment of, you know, how will your lower extremity function, your mobility, and your fall risk. Another way we can measure this is gait velocity. So it's basically how fast, how long it takes you to walk a certain distance. Usually we have 10 meters and we'll time from start to stop how long it takes you to cover that distance. And then we'll calculate your gait velocity that way. So a lot of times there's this discussion of a sixth vital sign, which is your gait velocity. And they stress the importance of this because how fast you walk is basically an indication of how well you're able to function in community and your risk of falling. Over here, we have a list of numbers and ranges kind of indicating, you know, certain things. You know, if you're under 0.7 meters per second, there's a risk of falls and death, hospitalization. And then as the time gets faster, it's indicative of how well you're able to move throughout the community. And these are nice measurable items that we can keep track of while you're progressing through physical therapy to show you, you know, the gains that you're making. There's another assessment called the 30-second sit to stand test. So we count how many times you're able to sit and stand from a surface in 30 seconds. So this is another infographic demonstrating that. And I don't know if you can see down here, there's below average scores. They score them differently for men and women, and depending on how many times you can do it and different age brackets, it indicates, you know, your risk of falling. This is something you could do with the healthcare provider, or if you're curious yourself, as long as there's someone there supervising you and your chair is in a secure place, you can assess yourself as well. Another assessment is the functional reach test. This is having you stand with your feet planted in a certain spot. We have you reach out forward. We're going to demonstrate these a little bit later as well. And without moving your feet, we want to see how far you can reach forward. And that distance that you cover is, there are other norm values that show how likely you are to fall. And I think Irina likes to talk about this test because of the different strategies that addresses.
We're going to talk during demonstration.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to do it a little bit later today. So let's do this. Let's finish with all the PowerPoint and then we come back to this, but you're going to see us moving. And of course we would be able to answer all the questions towards the end, right? So let's go through the PowerPoint and then we'll.
Okay, so there's just remember the functional reach test, and then Irina is going to discuss different strategies later that are very important for your balance. And then, of course, treatment interventions, right? We do all these assessments, we ask you all these questions, and the importance of physical therapy in helping you improve your balance and your ability to function is giving you safe and appropriate exercises prescribed to help improve your range of motion, strength, and balance. We give you specific strength and range of motion exercises that target your hips, knees, and ankles. We have balance exercises, including standing with support, without support, participating in activities with narrow and wide base of support, and performing various tasks over even and uneven surfaces. We try to simulate as various situations to kind of challenge you and what we think life would throw at you as well. Okay, so we're going to kind of delve deeper into this when we demonstrate the exercises. This is how we would progress a balance exercise for you. We would have We would always start with something easier and then we continue to progress to make things more challenging. We also time to see how long you're able to do things. And of course, as you improve, we anticipate the time gets better. You show more steadiness and you could do the more challenging task that's progressed from. And then of course, most challenging is throwing balance into walking, because we know walking in community, it's never a perfect scenario. There's people, sounds everywhere. The floor is uneven, surfaces are uneven. So a lot of the exercises that we give you are to try to simulate what you would see potentially in the outside world. Okay. So I think now we're going to go into demonstrations of some of the tests and the exercises that we discussed earlier. Okay.
So I'll share this.
Okay.
And you can see us with cameras.
So we'll stop the sharing and then hopefully that's going to open up the camera larger so you can see us. Okay. All right. So we're going to kind of angle the camera this way and then we're going to head to the...
I'll try to stand up so you can see my feet. Is it
or if you step further back, I think you'll be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try that.
Okay. Do you guys see me? Do you see position of my feet? Yes or no?
We could get thumbs up from someone.
Yes, we can see your feet. If we need to see your head, you're going to have to get back further, though.
Okay. I will get back. Okay. How about now?
How's that?
Okay, that seems to be good.
Perfect.
So what I want us to do, I want to explain a few things. How we balance. How is the balancing we work? Our feet, we call it base of support. The wider I keep my feet, more supported I am. Our center of gravity is somewhere around our belly button, umbilicus over here. So my center of gravity needs to be between base of support in order to be stable. When my center of gravity goes a little bit forward, my body uses strategy. My ankles start working very, very hard. I'm just leaning forward. My ankle muscles, my first responders, they work very, very hard to bring me back, to bring my center of gravity in between base of support. If, let's say, somebody pushes me from front and I'm about to fall backwards, muscles that running in front of my ankles, they do the job. They bring me forward, so my center of gravity within the base of support. If I position my feet more narrow, that actually making my base of support a little bit less steady. So every time we walk in a narrow pattern, we technically challenging our balance. If we wanna give a person tip how to feel steady on the feet, we always say, hey, try to walk a little bit wider, like a captain on a ship, like a seawalk. So this way you're gonna feel more secure when you are walking. So the first strategy that body uses to bring center of gravity back to safety, back to base of support, is the ankle strategy. So for us, for therapists, is it extremely important to make sure that the mobility of your ankle joint is intact. So we always encourage people, number one, during the day, perform those ankle pumps like you're pushing on a gas pedal, up, down, that you do certain stretches to kind of stretch your calf muscles, make sure the flexibility of your ankle joint is preserved. Now, let's say I cannot really, balance myself using ankle strategy. What next happening? Next, my hip starts saving me. So if my body is about to fall forward and I need to bring my center of gravity back, my ankle cannot help me anymore. I do this. I just kind of balance around my hip joints and my hips are helping me. So that's a hip strategy we call. Now, let's say the force is much greater than my hips are able to help me and about to fall forward. What my body does this correct reactive, you know, protective step forward. I'm just reacting by stepping forward. So the speed of balance reaction, extremely, extremely important. So when we work with the patients and we work on a balance, we're working with all those strategies. We're analyzing, okay, where is your balance problem is actually coming from? Is it coming from weakness in the hip muscles? Is it coming more from stiffness in your ankles? Is this coming from the weakness of muscles that runs the tibialis centurion in front of the foot that kind of prevent you to bring your body, your center of gravity back to safety, to base of support? So if everything is okay with that, we start working on improving your balance reaction. So we do lots of activity when we teach you how to save yourself when you're making protective step to the side, when you're making protective step forward, when you're making protective step back. So functional reach test, right? So that's a test that actually measure how steady you on your feet. My arm is like this. Actually, I'm looking at my knuckles. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding my hand like almost like in a fist position. And I'm reaching forward. And I see, this is it. For me, I cannot go any further because if I will, I start falling forward. So that's the distance that we measure. So from my starting position to where I can reach, this is it. I can go any further. If I go further, I have to make a protective step forward. And then it's a normative values. Like what is expected from us? Of course, we all come in different sizes. So it has some deviation plus minus 3 centimeters. And that's how we know if we're able to reach for what is 12 centimeters, which is what is 12 centimeters in inches.
It's around, yeah, it ranges anywhere from 14 to 10 in women and 16 to 13 in men, depending on the age.
Depending. Mm-hmm. So if I'm working with a patient who has trouble reaching forward, that would be my exercise with this patient. We're going to be standing in a narrow base of support and trying to reach forward and bringing body back. Reach forward and bringing body back. So that's about functional reach test. A sit to stand test, just to measure how many times safely you can go from sit to stand. So let me grab any chair. If you practice, never use a computer chair. That's a bad idea. Bad.
I'm taking this chair. I'll set this chair up here and have it basically clenched at a wall or a corner so it won't slip anywhere.
Right? So if you can see me here, okay, so that's a very sturdy chair. My hands are there. According to this test, I should not be helping myself with my arms. So let's say you put a timer on, and in 30 seconds, how many times I can get up and down, I actually have to touch the seat, and that's a number. And when you get yourself to a certain number, this number indicates, okay, I'm in a high risk of fall, or I'm in a very, very low risk of fall. I'm okay with it. So that's actually how this test performs. When we're measuring gait speed, gait velocity, so technically that's a two people who are working together. You, let's say, a patient, you just walking, so you mark those 10 meters. So I start walking and Stephanie times you. I'm walking my pace. I don't have to try to walk the fastest way I want. No. You just walking your normal, regular pace. And she is just when, you know, she sees this, like, I don't know if you're able to see on the floor this white mark, which is exactly that meter. So we can see how fast I cross this distance. And that's how we calculate my gait speed. As I improve on therapy, after all those exercises and activities that we do with people, we can retest you and see, hey, look,
you improve by 0.3 seconds or you improve by whatever amount, any positive improvement, we'll be very, very happy to see it.
What does we have to demonstrate? Again, what we were thinking.
The exercises.
And exercises, right.
Yeah.
So when it comes to exercises, be using those principles that I described to you earlier, but I want to make sure that you are in a very safe environment. What we do for that? If you can see, I am in a corner. I have walls on both sides to protect me, right? So I'm standing here in a corner. My body is not touching the wall. My body is there. I put a sturdy chair in front of me. So I'm kind of in this little bubble, air bubble, this little box that I'm standing. Now I stand like this. I try to challenge myself. I put my feet together. So one foot is touching the other. So my basis support is very, very narrow. And I'm just standing still. My job is to stand still. You will experience the body goes like it's a little swaying motion. It's a normal, it's expected. Too much sway, let's say I'm swaying too much. I have a wall to catch. I have a wall to catch me. So I'm very, very safe. Whichever direction my body starts feeling unstable, I practice. And brain learns by repetition. After I repeat it 5 times, 10 times every day, you'll see how your timing is improving. Let's say timing when you're able to stand with your feet together, initially, it's only 3 or 4 seconds. Then you're looking for a wall or for a chair. You practice and you see how your timing now turns into 10 seconds of standing, 30 seconds of standing. When it becomes too easy, look, I can get even more narrow. I bring one foot in front of the other, not the fully, like one quarter. So one foot is a little bit in front of the other. And I do the same thing. I'm standing and I'm trying to stand still. If that becomes easy and I want a little bit more challenge, there's two ways that I can do. Thing number one, I'm eliminating vision. So now I'm really, really relying on my somatosensory system, communication between nerves at the bottom of my feet, my joint, and my brain, because vision is no longer telling me where I'm in space. It's a big challenge. And why it's important? Because when we are moving in a dark time of the day, or especially winter time, yes, it reduces our balance significantly. So when you're practicing, when you're training your body to balance with your eyes closed, it's automatically improving your ability to navigate during winter time, or when you're coming back from the restaurants, you need to go to your parking lot and it's very, very dark outside. So if I want to challenge myself a little bit more, I bring my foot in front of the other, you know, like fully. So just like if people remember those like old police officers drunk test before they have those breathalyzers, right? So they made you walk. They made you walk in this heel toe. So I'm just standing now. It's hard for you to see, position my feet, but my foot is in front of my left foot, as Stephanie is demonstrating, right? And that's my other challenge. That's another thing that I'm practicing. Let's say I become pro. It's too easy. I am just too good with this. Look what I'm doing. I'm standing with one foot. And again, as I'm standing with my foot, I'm in a corner. If my body starts leaning to one side or the other side, if I need to grab to the chair, again, I am safe. And more you practice, believe me, easier it will become for your body. And I think the last exercise or last activity on our slide was the one when we were putting things together and we were making you walk with this heel toe, heel toe, heel toe. So it's a very difficult, you know, everybody fails this test. Everybody. I don't encourage you to start with this. It's just more progression. You can do it when you completed all other tasks with flying colors. It's nothing for you. You can practice this one. If you want to try though, please be next to the wall so you can slide your arm you can slide your hand on a wall, and this way you feel more protected, or have somebody nearby next to you.
Okay.
So is it anything you guys would like to discuss or go over with? Please use your time, talk to us. It's very hard to do those lectures when we're not in person, but at the same time, it's great because we're able to reach to more people at the time.
Any questions, concerns, or anything?
I don't have questions, a few compliments. And actually somebody gave us a tip. Somebody said, when you are balancing on one leg, stare at a spot on the wall and it'll help you stand longer.
Yeah,
perfect. That's something that help you engage your vestibular system a little bit more. You're absolutely right about it. It's something that you want to start with when you're staring on steady object on the wall to kind of help yourself balancing. But when it becomes easy, we actually say, hey, eliminate vision entirely. Try to stand and balance with your eyes closed.
Oh, okay. Two questions I have, and you guys should check yours. People may have chatted you directly. So somebody wants to know why it's not recommended to walk barefoot at home. And somebody else is asking, should they avoid slippers?
Yeah. Well, slippers, I personally think with slippers, if it's something you could slip your foot into, it's something quick for your foot to slip out of. And if you lose your balance, your shoe that's a slipper isn't firmly holding onto your foot, and that's going to increase your risk of falling. I like the house shoes that are closed in the front, closed in the back.
About walking barefoot, it's controversial. We can go with another discussion, but I tell you this much. When we are walking and we're hitting the ground with a foot, there is a physics, there is a ground reaction force that hits us back. So when we're wearing like comfortable shoes, they provide us with some sort of shock absorption. So if I'm walking barefoot, if my body is not able to dissipate the stress at the level of the ankle, I feel it in my knee, I feel it up to kinetic chain into my hip and to my spine. That's why walking barefoot may not be the best when it comes to protection. When it comes to balancing, you know, sometimes people slip, you know, like when they walk barefoot. If you prefer to walk barefoot, if you like it, again, we cannot really stop you or prevent you. Just be mindful. Me personally, from walking barefoot, and I am walking barefoot in a house, few times it happened to me, I was hitting my foot pretty hard over the sofa, and I had a pretty bad bruise or a fracture at the, how you call the small toe,
pinky toe,
small toes in the foot. So I just, my personal thing, I do walk barefoot,
I think we have a question about balancing with challenged knees. Ms. Silberman, is it because you have knee pain or arthritis? I'm not sure, but you know, anytime a part of your body is challenged or impaired, it's going to affect your balance. And I think this is more important reason to seek out a medical provider. You know, a physical therapist can see what actually is challenging your knee. Is it weakness? Is it your range of motion? Is it your mobility? So even though you have a challenged knee, it doesn't mean you can't practice balance. You would probably just need a more catered program.
I have a question here. I have a couple, but I'll one at a time. How much slowing of gait may one expect over the years? Is there a standard, or each person is different?
Well, it's person, I would say, is different, but they do have what is normative. So what they do, they study lots of individuals of the same age group, and out of their like performances, they come up with a normative data. Right. So I think we're looking at one of the slides. You want to share it again?
Sure.
So we're going to share this slide and we're going to give you numbers again one more time. Give us 1 second. We're just going through this. Okay. Can you see it on your screen?
Yes.
So
The question was about age, or yeah. question was about the
how much you expect with age. And I think that's the tricky question, right? People expect that which with age things decline, but when you're actively working to combat these changes that have that are expected with age, I think you can reduce the risk of slowing down your gait speed. So I don't think that there's a specific number, like every 5 or 10 years you age, your gait velocity slows down. I don't think there's a correlative number with that. I think it's just they more so correlate your gait speed with what risks that there are.
I think they more come up with this number for sit to stand test, right?
Yes.
Can we go? So some things that they really study. Look, it's a very interesting thing, but they didn't really have data for it. What they have data, if you can see this slide, you see this is, yeah, if you can enlarge, chair stand below average. So like I am coming from sit to stand in a chair, right? And if I am a man, and here you see breakdown from 60 to 64, from 65 years to age to 69, they expect you to be able to go at least 12 times, or for women, it's 11 times this age group. So they did study particularly when they combine age and performance. For a gait speed, I don't think there is a data that's saying that that's how fast people walk between this, in this decade of your life, you know? So not something that we are aware of.
One second.
We had something about barefoot with a sock that is sticky. Sticky socks are always good because they give you nice grip. But at the end of the day, we don't know your specific condition. But...
And they don't give you shock absorption. My first point was, okay, we prefer you to wear shoes just because it's more protecting your foot and give you better shock absorption. Sticky socks, they're good, but they not really do anything to protect your foot. What is expectation for a good rate with sit? Yeah, sit to stand exercise. So Miss Helen Bauer, I think you're looking at the screen to answer your question.
And don't worry, these are just things to be like, oh, hey, maybe I should go talk to my doctor. Maybe I should try to work on this. So this is in no means to make you nervous about anything.
Yes, you can definitely have the links. We were just discussing with Judy previously how this PowerPoint is going to be distributed. You can come back to this PowerPoint slides, and it has all the links in it. We definitely can email everything to Judy directly. I will definitely do it.
I have a question here. Someone wants to know if they can get away without weight training and just do swimming regularly. Does that help?
It's definitely helped. When we talk about bone density, when we talk about osteoporosis or osteopenia, unfortunately, swimming is not the answer here. Like Stephanie is a professional swimmer, that person who spent in a pool like big chunk of her life hours, which is amazing, amazing cardiopulmonary exercise. But when it comes to building new bone, building this osteoclast, we need gravity. We need using a little bit of resistant, not a water resistant, but actually weight. If I would be able to show you a x-ray of astronauts that just came in from this out of space, you'll see their bone density. You'll be surprised. It's just at the level of, I don't know, like 150-year-old person, you know? That's how what happened to us when we don't experience gravity. Mm-hmm. So we really, really, it depends what you want. Of course, for cardiopulmonary, like for endurance training, swimming is a wonderful activity to unload your back, unload your spine. It's absolutely great. But when we're talking about bone density, we need a little bit different intervention here.
Okay. I don't have any other questions. Do you?
Let's see.
You say it's better to walk slowly. I find when I rush, you get into trouble.
Okay, if it better. So there is a difference between walking slowly but having a good control over movement, as opposed to people who walk slowly simply because they cannot walk faster. So it's a different, two different criteria. I think that paying attention it's extremely, extremely important. When you rush, it's not when you walk fast, it's just when you rush, when you do something in rush. Yes, definitely. It's not the best thing to do things as you're rushing, but it's not better to walk slowly unless you're just walking on a proper technique and proper control.
Okay, somebody asked the question, okay, if God forbid you do fall, what should you do then?
Okay, it really, really depends. Stay where you are before you actually able to assess a situation, because we were talking about hip fractures. It's a very, very common thing. You may not necessarily sustain a hip fracture, but you can have like bad bruise or something. We even have this term, we call it bone bruise. Our bones also can be bruised. So if you have somebody in a house to help you, to assist you, it's okay. Some people, they wear those life alert. They just literally attach to their neck, so you can always call. Some cell phones have this feature when actually they sense trouble and they can get somebody to assist you. So many times, even emergency medical technician, when they come to a scene, when something just happened, some accident, they know not to change position, not to try to lift before they assess situation if it's safe to lift. If you cannot really move your leg, if you know that something doesn't feel right, don't make any attempt to get up independently. Look for help if it's possible. If it's not possible, if you're completely alone and you're not within reach of any assistive device, like any telephone, any device, like try to crawl slowly to the nearest chair or a couch and help yourself, you know, up if that's the only way.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, yeah. Somebody wants to know, they said that they have trouble getting up from a couch position, from a crouch position to standing. What should they work on?
Crouch position? Crouch, like meaning if you were to pick something up from the floor?
I assume.
Squatted position?
I mean, I guess if you're meaning like, I guess, crouching down to tie your shoe, there are always ways to practice that. Maybe practice crouching by a sturdy chair or a table you can hold on to. So you're giving yourself assistance from your hands to help you. And as that gets easier, you can start taking away the assistance from that and practice the motion that's difficult for you, but with supervision, if you're not sure if you're able to do it.
And also, you know how easier for us to get up from a higher surface and how difficult it is to get up when surface gets lower and lower and lower. So if you'd like to train yourself, it's not something that you're going to fix in one day, but let's say if you want to start training yourself, you do the sit to stand activity from a higher chair, and then you get yourself into a little bit lower surface, a little bit lower. So you're slowly, gradually getting yourself to a point when you get able to get up from the small IKEA stool, you know, the one that like, and then you can practice real squats.
Right. Same with everything we said, start easy and get difficult. Sorry, Judy.
Yeah, no, I see that. I'm seeing that we're kind of over time, and I think some people may need to leave, but I'm getting lots of compliments. So I want to thank you so much for a wonderful presentation, for giving us a lot of strategies, a lot of things to think about. We will be sending this out either later today or tomorrow. So everybody can, you know, if you can see it again. And we just want to thank the hospital, and we want to thank Irina and Stephanie for a terrific presentation and for just keeping us safe. Next week, we'll be having another medical program. It will be actually on Parkinson's and some late-breaking strategies that our presenter has been involved with. So please join us then. You'll be getting that registration later today. And I just want to mention one more time, our upreaching campaign, which we're very appreciative of everyone's generosity. It's still up with the 12-hour marathon of programming. So if you haven't had a chance to donate yet, please, you'll be getting that link again, probably for the last time with the recording. So if you haven't had a chance to donate, or you know anyone that does, please get on it, and please get onto the link and help us out. It will directly be affecting our programming in the coming year. There's a lot more that we want to do, and we need your help to get it done. So thank you so much, and take care. Have a great week. Be safe and be healthy.